Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder as I head out from the library and deliver an episode to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, greetings, friends. It's a lovely day here in suburban Chicago. I am happy to be strolling home from the library and talking with you about games. Well, I just picked up some books and a movie, and I'm looking forward to watching them sometime soon. But in the meantime, I think it's time for us to talk about some games I played recently. That's right, it's time for Espresso Espresso, Triple Shot. Today, for those of you unfamiliar with this episode type, this is a short review, first impressions episode. Basically what I do is I pick out three games I've played recently for the first time and one game I recently dusted off, and I talk a little bit about the experience of playing them and give you a quick idea of what I thought of them on a first impression. I do want to caution, none of these are formal reviews because I haven't played these games either in a long time or I've only played them once or twice, and so I wouldn't deign to review them nonetheless. So to start with, I have the Perry Mason game. This game was given to me by Rob, who found it at a Goodwill and said, you know what, who wants a cheesy game based on a TV show from the 1950s and 60s? Brendan. And he was right. I did want that game. Now, it is definitely part of my novelty collection, meaning it is not a game I have because I think the gameplay is particularly good, nor a game that I plan to play particularly often. In fact, playing it once gets it off my shelf of opportunity, and I can't imagine I'll play it again unless I do something with it for some other purpose. Nonetheless, the Perry Mason game is an amusing little game in which you are trying to solve a mystery, and the way that the game works is it has a clue-style card deck with all of these different clues. And so what you're trying to do is figure out which witness does not have a good alibi, or I don't remember exactly which piece it is, but like Clue, you're trying to find the missing card from the display of cards. But the interaction is like a courtroom. You call witnesses by moving around the board, and then when that witness is on the stand, you pick a player and you ask them questions about that witness, and if they can answer the answer, they do so and they give you the card. Now here's the part that doesn't work very well, is that you keep that card then and you keep it in play, which means that if someone else is trying to find out the answer to that thing, or if someone else is trying to find another answer to which you could use that card, which there are sort of multiples, then you can just give them that card that they've already heard. There is an element where you can ask questions in the judge's chambers, and those answers are given to you secretly, so the other players don't know what answers you got. That's kind of it. I mean, there's a couple spaces on the board that give you special powers. There's not a house to move around like Clue. Instead, there's a square board with a path around the outside, reminiscent of Monopoly or any number of other games. And on your turn, you're going to roll and you move, and the space where you land determines what you can do. But you do get a little bit more choice in terms of what you do once you're given that thing you can do. Now, a lot of the theming is interesting and the writing is good on the cards. Now, there are only two cases, but remember, the cases are not formally solved. But so it'd be sort of like in Clue, instead of solving just the murder of Mr. Body, maybe you also solve, you know, a heist or something. And the gameplay is the same, but the answers that you have to read the cards are different. My guess is if you played this, you know, once a month or something, having two cases would make it feel fresh for longer. Nonetheless, all of the answer cards, there's only two sets of them, and so you have a limited pool that you could use if the narrative part is what's interesting. Now, of course, the goal of the game is this deduction. So, and finally, there's spaces on the board that give you special actions, and those spaces are themed around characters from the show. So if, like me, you don't know anything about the show other than that Raymond Burr was in it, it's pretty hard for you to know what those do. And also, there's a funny element where the game doesn't label the board. It assumes that you know who the characters are. And some of the rules refer to the characters by name instead of by picture. So their pictures are on the board and their names are in the rule book. And you have to kind of hunt around a little bit to find a place where it shows you both the name and the picture so that you know who is who. And the game doesn't really go out of its way to do that for you. So that was pretty funny. Actually, I think the way we found it is I went on the Internet Movie Database and I looked at the cast for the show. And because the pictures of the characters are a little bit like the cast of the show, then we were able to figure out who based on the cast that's on the internet. So I'm sure that was available to people in 1960 if they were playing the Perry Mason. Anyway, that's Perry Mason. Next up, I'm talking about the Marvel Dice Throne. My plan is to talk about Frosthaven at the end of the episode, so if you don't want to know anything about it, you can turn off early. I'm not going to spoil it much, but, you know. Anyway, so next up is Marvel Dice Throne. This is a game a friend of mine backed. I borrowed it to try it out. I've played it a couple times now with my son. My son really likes it. He thinks it's pretty fun. The theme is neat. There's lots of interaction. You get some flexibility in terms of the dice. If you haven't played it, it's essentially Yahtzee, but with superheroes. And instead of marking off boxes on your sheet when you complete one of the different dice formula, instead you get a special power that damages your opponents in some way. Now, the game comes with a whole bunch of little different tokens and other things that allow the characters to feel differentiated, and it gives them special powers as well, which makes them a little swingy. But overall, as far as if I'm gonna play a Yahtzee-style game goes, Dice Throne isn't bad. Now, I will say it's kind of slow. We played with three players, and I found that a little dull with two players even. When you're waiting for the other person to take their turn, there's very little to do, and the turns are kind of long. So, like, my biggest challenge for this would be, I think playing it at a higher player count would be really unpleasant in terms of how much time the game would take. It would be interesting to see what this game would look like if you could kind of play it simultaneously. I don't know how that would work exactly, but it probably wouldn't. Now, the production value in this game is off the charts. The box is really nice. Each character comes in their own game trays, custom game tray with their own custom dice and their own custom board and their cards and their tokens. And it's all contained in these little trays, so you can carry the trays around. You know, from a production standpoint, it's really nice. And the way that the characters work is pretty fun too. The different powers that the characters have feel organic, or at least suited to the theme of those characters. And yeah, just overall, the aesthetic and the play of Marvel Dice Throne was pretty fun as far as a Yahtzee-style dice game goes. Like I said, I thought it was fine. I certainly will play it if somebody asks to, particularly my son. I'm happy to play it with him. I'm probably not going to suggest it to others. And when he says he's done with it, I'll return it to my friend. So that's Marvel Dice Throne from Roxley Games. Next up is my Dusty game. Remember, a Dusty game is a game you haven't played for a year or more. This time is a long time ago. If you listen to the Top of the Stack episode, I mentioned that this game makes me feel nostalgic. And when I put down on the Out of the Dust list how long ago I'd played this, I wrote greater than 20 years, because I literally don't remember the last time I played this, but it was definitely in undergraduate college or in high school. Or like, I feel like in the summer between years in college, like I was home and we played with some friends. Now, this is not a game that I ever owned, but I found it at Goodwill for, you know, $2. And it's a regular staple at Goodwill. So if you want a copy, you should be able to find one without too much effort. And, you know, it is a classic, I give clues, you answer my clues kind of game, with a broad and non-specific enough set of cards that it doesn't go stale the way that Trivial Pursuit does, or even Monikers is starting to. If you're unfamiliar with the game, Taboo, basically on your turn you get a card with a word at the top in bold, and then like four or five words underneath it in regular font. And the person to your right and left has, or the person to your left has a buzzer, and they can see the card that you're working on. And then you have the rest of the people around the table, half of whom are on your team. Now, the people on your team, you are trying to get them to say the word that's on the card. And you are not supposed to use hand gestures, although our group did some. And you're not allowed to say the word or any piece of the word or alternate forms of the word, nor any of the other words on the card. And that's the big trick with Taboo, is that they put on words that you aren't supposed to say. And so you have to work your way around them. And often it'll be something really dramatic. So like, let's say the answer's the Bible. One of the words on there might be book, another one might be religion, another one might be faith, another one might be Jesus, right? And so you have to figure out a way to get the other people to say Bible without saying any of those words. And often it's really tricky. Sometimes you won't notice one and then you say it while you're describing it. And then you get like a minute to get as many of those words said by your team as you can. And, you know, once you've gone around the table, then whichever team has got the most words cards wins. And if you make a mistake, then the other team, of course, gets the card that you were trying to get set. You know, overall, it's a really, it's a classic for a reason. It's a really fun game. If somebody says, hey, I'm in the mood to play Taboo, I would not turn them down. I think it's a fun game and well worth your time. If you've never tried it, definitely give it a go. Okay, the last game I want to talk about today is Frosthaven. I am not going to talk about plot. I'm going to try to stick to mechanisms that are clearly described in the rule book. So this is stuff that would not be a surprise to you before you play the first time, or this would be stuff that you would learn before you play the first time. So if that's too much for you, I would say either pause this episode and then come back to it sometime later when you've played Frosthaven, or this could be the end of the episode, in which case, thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time. Or you don't care about very minor spoilers. So here we go. Frosthaven is the large box follow-up to Isaac Childress's monster 2017 hit Gloomhaven. Gloomhaven is, of course, a massive dungeon crawl game in which you are going on adventures, fighting monsters. And Frosthaven is, I mean, the best way to describe it is more of the same, but with extra stuff. The gameplay is the same. If you know how to play Gloomhaven, you already know 90% of what you need to know for Frosthaven. In fact, most of the stuff in Frosthaven that's different is not gameplay related, but is rather related to the extra stuff surrounding the game, the campaign portion. The premise is Gloomhaven is this thriving city in the southern part of the continent that we see depicted in the Cephalofair Gloomhaven world. But then there is a mountain pass, and then north of the mountains there is a cold region, and there is a small settlement that has recently been founded there called Frosthaven. It is an extreme outpost settlement without much development yet, and you have been enticed to go there, or you've gone. I don't really understand why we've gone there. I'm sure it said in the rule book, I forget. The idea is you've gone there to find your way and make your fortune. Now, as adventurers in the same style as Gloomhaven, the gameplay is very similar. You get a deck of cards, you're picking a hand of those cards to take into battle, and then you use two cards each round. Every time you have to draw cards back up, you're going to lose one for good, and some of the cards also get lost for good when you play them. And then your goal is to kill all the monsters, usually, and make your way through the scenario without running out of cards. So from the perspective of playing Gloomhaven, Frosthaven feels very, very similar. So if you like what's going on in Gloomhaven, you'll probably like Frosthaven. If you played Gloomhaven and did not like it, Frosthaven is more of the same. It's a very similar game. If you played Gloomhaven and you didn't like it, Frosthaven is not going to change your mind. It's the same game. It's more of the same. However, there are some differences. The biggest difference has to do with how you get items. Because Frosthaven is an outpost town just on the verge of settlement, or it's just been settled, it's brand new, you don't have the same amenities that you have in the bustling metropolis of Gloomhaven. In particular, you don't have shops that you can go to. What that means is that when you want to get items, you have to make them yourself or have someone make them for you. And in order to do that, you have to collect supplies. So in Frosthaven, instead of acquiring gold and using that gold to buy items, you now acquire these loot cards, which are full of different resources. You then take the resources back to Frosthaven, and you can use those resources to either build new buildings or craft new items. And the items, at the beginning, they're the only ones that are available. As the game goes along, more will be available, and that's how it goes. Our favorite thing, or my son's favorite thing, is the potions. There's this big chart of potions, and the way that works is, you know, as you're adventuring, one of the things you could find is potion ingredients. There's a whole bunch of different ingredients. And then you can, as one of your things to do, brew a potion. And the way you do that is you mix two ingredients together and take them to this chart. And the chart will give you, there's a little thing that you peel off. And when you do that, then it will tell you what kind of potion you've mixed. Once you've done that, now people know how to mix that potion. And if they want to mix one, they can. But before that, nobody knows what those two ingredients mixed together will do. So that's an interesting little bit of discovery. The town itself has a bunch of buildings you start with just a few buildings, and these can be upgraded. But then there are also lots of other buildings to be discovered after your adventures. I mean, so far we are really liking Frosthaven. The characters that we picked as our starting characters, we're playing four players, are pretty satisfying and interesting. I like the character. I picked the I can't even remember what it's called. It's an Aether Stormbringer, I think, or I don't remember. It's a necromancer character. I have lots of skeleton summons. It's pretty neat. But there's, you know, several different characters you can pick. I think five that you could pick from for the initial play. And then after that, there will be more that will open up, as with the previous Gloomhaven. You know, all in all, I'm really excited to continue playing Frosthaven. I'm sure at some point I will do a Message from the Deep episode about it, because we are planning to play a lot. My son and I both are really into it. If there are weekends where we don't, where we aren't able to play together, then where the whole family can't play, then my son and I are just going to play Jaws of the Lion, because we never finished that campaign. And it'd be fun to kind of work our way through that one as well. You know, all in all, great time. Really happy to have Frosthaven and to be playing it. So, well, that brings me to the end of my walk and the end of this podcast. What games have you been playing lately? Head over to BoardGameGeek Guild 3269 and share your thoughts there. I'd love to hear what new games you've played, what games you've dusted off, and what you think of the games I've been playing. If you want to reach out directly, you can email me, brendan@rattleboxgames.com, or you can send me a message on BoardGameGeek. Wombat929 is my username there. Thanks for joining me on my walk today. I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.